there, so.
Even Dustin.
Oh, yeah. Where? I don't see Dustin.
He's in the cloud.
I am here.
In fact, we can usually say above. Dustin's in the cloud, right?
Are you in Hawaii or Thailand or?
I've got a little bit of a sniffle, so I am about a mile away from you.
Oh, that's a good place.
Keep your sniffles there. Thank you.
Okay, the work session's in order. First order of business is roll call. So we'll start with Dustin.
Present.
Okay, Marjorie.
Present.
Rolio. Here. Mr. Wadeway.
I'd be here.
Bob is
here.
Gary.
Here.
And Mr. Budget Committee Member Updike.
Yes, fellow committee member. Here.
Okay, all are here, including Dustin. Okay, so first order of business is the fiscal year 2024/25 goal setting. Mr. Director.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development. So it's that time of year. The council's embarked on their goal setting. They do ask that each of the departments do their goal setting as well. Council's put together a draft set of goals that they have for the upcoming fiscal year. And that draft set of goals has been set for public hearing on the 18th of March. You have an opportunity to provide feedback. That's one of the purposes of this meeting, is to kind of go through the council's goals. And first, if you have any feedback you wish us to provide, I'm certainly happy to share that with the city manager. Or if it's serious stuff, you can also ask, you know, has I put it in a letter for you? Look it over at the upcoming meeting. Excuse me. You certainly have you have time. I mean, this is an opportunity to kind of go through and discuss goals, what adjustments you'd like to make. I can bring back then a finalized set of goals for your next meeting and have that all wrapped up before the council wraps up their goals. So I think timing works well. So what I have teed up on the big screen here is council's goals. So I thought I'd run through those first. I highlighted some that I wanted to stop and talk about because they actually relate to our department. There are other goals in here that do not. For those of you, I think a number of you obviously have gone through this exercise before, but I do want to emphasize that we have a greater Newport area vision document that we worked on with the community a number of years ago that has high-level strategies that we want to achieve, some of which are City of Newport specific, others of which are not. You know, some of them relate to our healthcare system or the quality of our schools and so on and so forth, and really require the implementation of other parties. For a number of years now, what we've been doing is we've been correlating the work that we're doing to the strategies that are outlined in that document. I included a copy of the brochure with the packet, and the lettering on that, as we go through here, aligns with the strategies in that brochure if you want the full text of what those strategies are or action items, however they're framed. I'm going to kind of start running through here. This was the schedule that you saw, March 18th being the date for possible adoption of the goals. The council spent the better part of a day working on those. They first had a chance to talk to department heads. They took a look at the department summaries. I included a copy of the CDD one in your packet. We put together one for each of the departments, just so that the council get a better understanding of what departmental operations are, what our day-to-day responsibilities are. Much of what every department in the city is doing is not encapsulated in these goals, per se. They are things that the departments are required to do by statute, you know, or there are things that the city's committed to doing, and that's outlined in those summary sheets. So it was intended to give our elected officials a broader perspective of what everybody's doing, because you know they don't operate in the day-to-day kind of environment. They operate, you know, just as you do in your regularly scheduled meetings and with your work programs, but they don't see what people are doing on a day-to-day basis, and that understanding those day-to-day operational responsibilities is pretty important when you're goal setting, because you want to make sure that your goals are, at least some of them are attainable given what your existing resources and commitments are. So let's move on in here. So I went ahead and I'm going to pan forward to community, to those that are community development. Administrative ones are largely the city managers, and there's not, I mean, we our department plays a role in those, but not the lead. I did, here we go. Want to touch on a few here.
Could you
that guy
touch on A6 as it relates to us?
A6? Yeah, sure. I'm going to go back to that.
Inclusive, diverse, and equitable. Don't exactly reach that on this commission. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
We got one oddball.
Six whites and one un.
The old white men and one young white woman.
Old farts and one woman.
I'm Swedigy. I'm Swedish and Portuguese. I don't know what that is.
Well, the objective for the upcoming year would be to provide training to all elected council and committee members. And so that is likely to be coordinated through human resources. And when those training opportunities become available, then we'll certainly get information out to committees. Presumably, it's going to be, my suspicion is it would be some form of online training that can be, something that we can work into a upcoming work session during the next fiscal year.
I think it might be a requirement, like the SEI stuff.
Yeah.
You mean in terms of taking the training or trying to further diversify the committee?
No, taking the training.
It might be. We haven't had a discussion about that, so I really can't say.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I got a letter about that because I didn't fill out my form.
Oh, very bad.
Uh-oh.
Jail is next step.
Yeah. They had to put it on the commission's agenda. And so I wrote a letter saying that I didn't know.
And A7.
Oh, you want to stay up there. Okay.
Well, as long as we're going through these, what do you think?
Oh.
That might have any implications for us? I sort of doubt it.
No, because Planning Commission is one of the few committees we actually have that's statutorily required. We have to have one in some form. And if they don't have you, then the council has to do it. And I don't think they want to do it. So Planning Commission is kind of one of the core committees.
I mean, you sort of touch on it when you get to the looking at whether once a month versus twice a month from a workload standpoint makes sense, right? I mean, that's in your departmental.
Yeah, we were all looking to put out some stuff if our electeds are looking to streamline, one way of streamlining would be to trim back some of the meetings. So maybe holding, work sessions once a month, whereas we always keep the option of having two regular sessions because of statutory timelines.
The 120-day thing.
120-day clock, stuff like that. We wouldn't be able to get away with a monthly in all circumstances. In that context, but it's always hit and miss. We don't know when we're going to get an application, so we don't know what dates those are going to land on. For the work sessions, we could go to once a month. That would likely mean longer work sessions, and it would also mean that some of the stuff gets dealt with in a slower manner.
Is the emphasis behind this to try and make more efficient use of staff time?
I think it's, that's part of it. I think part of it would be freeing up staff time.
Well, same thing. Yeah, that's what I mean.
To
have the staff have to dedicate less time to running these committees, because
right.
I assume that department heads are always in charge.
Yeah,
except maybe, I don't know, bike head, although Mike may be running that. I don't know.
The bike ped would be actually Beth in our office staffs that. Yeah, we have. You know, I think with the committee work, it's the challenge is, and I know the, you know, we have a lot of committees at Newport as compared to some other communities, and the challenge, it's always a challenge staffing them. I mean, it's a balancing act with committee work is important because it's engaging members of the community in civics and taking advantage of their expertise, your expertise, and those of the others, folks who give their time to serve on standing committees. It's a big commitment on your part and that of, you know, Park and Rec and Public Arts and the Audit Committee and, you know, I can keep going down the list. You know, Library's got their committees. Police has a committee now. I mean, so there are quite a few. But it also is a significant investment in staff resources to make sure that, one, you feel like your work is meaningful, you know, that we're making progress on our work programs, you know, that you're, you know, you feel like things are moving forward. That takes a lot of staff time to develop material, takes staff time to do outreach. When we embark on projects like we will be on City Center, whenever we get the dang funding agreement from ODOT, that City Center revitalization project is going to have a boatload of outreach. You, as a planning commission, will be engaged. We'll have an ad hoc committee that's formed as part of that. You know, that's the balancing act. You know, and I think, yeah.
Seem to be expressing valid reasons not to try to revert to a 1 month work session.
I put that on there as an option. I didn't put that on there as something I'm necessarily pushing at this point in time. So as long as we don't go crazy with additional committees on our end, I think we'll be okay. But remember, we have parking too, you know, now that's a standing committee. Another one is right-sizing them. Parking meets once a month. I don't know that would be manageable or productive for us to try to do more than once a month with that particular committee. So it's also kind of making sure you kind of right-size that stuff. And then there are other forms of outreach that are outside of the committee context, too, that probably get dragged into that discussion and how we can be more effective at getting information to the public and improving our web presence and social media presence and so on and so forth. The council does have positions like a public information officer that hasn't been filled yet. It was budgeted, but it's still being recruited. You know, somebody in that position will be, you know, would help with some of that work. We also have a bilingual specialist that'll be with the outreach specialist that'll be with library, but will serve the entire city. Another staff member that would be largely dedicated to that type of work. We'll see how it shakes out.
Can you, it's not exactly on topic here, but can you tell us what the status of the department head staffing? What turnover is expect? I saw some reference to maybe chiefs are going to retire.
Yeah, we're probably looking at, in addition to the city manager who's announced his retirement, and we're in the middle of that recruitment, which will be, it's another little bit of a twist to goal setting, you know, that some of these maybe reshuffle around once we have a new city manager on board and depending upon their take on some of these particular priorities. But we'll probably have, we will have the fire chief who's probably going to be retiring. Police chief's going to retire. Our HR director's going to retire. So those are ones I know about in addition to the city manager. And we're not anywhere near staffed properly right now in engineering. I mean, we're so low right there that we're, I think, almost in the drowning versus the tread water mode. In fact, I'm about to take a task order to our city council to farm out the engineering review of public improvements for new development.
And we'll put of what?
A review of public improvements needed associated with new development. So say we have a new apartment building, you know, what kind of frontage improvements are they required to do, you know, that kind of thing. So that'll get farmed out, assuming the council agrees to that, and they'll actually report to me. And that'll free up engineering to work on engineering capital projects, which they're way behind on. They don't even have the staff yet. They're still, I believe they've hired an assistant city engineer, but she hasn't reported yet. And I don't know where they're at with the project management positions. They got two of them that are vacant.
It's really coming to a standstill, isn't it? Public Works and engineering.
You know, yeah, we've got, we don't have a Public Works director at this point. And so we've got the, you know, stand-ins that are doing a good job, but they're juggling, you know, Justin, for example, on streets, he's juggling a lot of stuff right now. And Chris Beattie, I mean, he's basically plugging holes in the dam right now in engineering. He's the last engineer standing. You know, he may be the city engineer, we'll see. He interviewed for it, but decision hasn't been made by the city manager on that position yet, so I don't know how that's going to play out. So we are a little tight on staff. It's a tough environment to recruit in right now, all over the place. And so we're not unique in that manner. So I don't want to mean doom and gloom, but what you do notice, I think, with the city council's goals is you didn't see a whole bunch of new stuff up there. It's more about let's keep making progress on the goals that we'd already established. Many of these goals are not one-year goals anyway, and they take multiple years to get them done. And so it's just plugging through and continuing to work on this stuff.
Okay, moving on.
Derek, I was going to say, Derek, you just touched on that, but I think from, you know, it's supporting the larger purpose of community development. I think Public Works is the biggest challenge right now for every project trying to be constructed in the city of Newport. And you know that, but I think it's, hopefully the commission knows that too.
Yeah, I, just one example, I tried to take some money out of the budget to fix a retaining wall at Betty Wheeler so that we could use the money elsewhere. And Spencer said, absolutely not. He said, that's a matter of public safety. We have to do that or somebody's going to get hurt. That was almost a year ago. And those blocks in that retaining wall continue to creep along, and it's going to fall over one day. But I don't, as far as I know, absolutely nothing has been done with that.
Well, it's, we have no staff, you yeah. know, to do that. I mean, you have to... ideally, you'd like to do small projects in-house, but we can't even do that right now. So just about everything has to be contracted. But that still requires staff to prepare, you know, the task orders and oversee the projects. And if you don't have project managers for that purpose, even if we contracted that element out, there's still an oversight component there. And we're just really treading water right now on that front.
Every day is a new fire, probably. Something new. You have to deal with.
And some of these are frankly, you know, when we're talking about grant funds, funded projects like the Safe Routes project we have on Harney, those are on schedules. And we can get extensions to a point, but, you know, eventually we've got to perform or you lose the funding. Yeah. So community development, we have the city center revitalization work. I just, you know, got an email from the state saying that they believe that they will actually have a funding agreement for us within the next 4 weeks.
Oh, wow. So,
they put a number to it.
Yeah.
Is there an ability to omit from this committee's goal location of the farmer's market? Because that will be contentious and a political hot potato, and maybe just pass it on off to the council.
I think it's got to be part of that whole planning process, and a lot of it's going to be dependent on 24B1B there. Are we going to have a couplet or not? And that's going to have a huge impact on what you possibly could do with the farm. Well, it may have a huge impact. I don't know.
I think we'll see more people voicing their opinion, you know, one way or the other, than we did for, let's say, the hotel on the Bayfront. And there was a lot of community interest in that.
Sure, because it's a meaningful change. You know, that is likely to have a significant impact, personally from my perspective, in a manner that would help revitalize downtown. Because at the end of the day, I mean, the objective is what's the most effective path to getting reinvestment in the commercial core areas. And I mean, we got to square with that. You know, if a couplet is the most effective tool there, then, you know, from my perspective, that's what we ought to be pursuing. If it's not,
are you expressing an opinion on the couplet?
Oh, sir, I have, but through the whole process.
It's come down to now the short couplet rather than the long couplet.
Well, not only am I mean, it's what the professionals who helped put that TSP together also said in terms of what the city's policy objectives are for what it wants to accomplish in the core area. That's the best option. The other option can work too, just it's not as effective in certain ways, and it's spelled out in the plan. Now, for the farmers market, I think our policymakers at the council level have been very clear. Their expectation is that whatever recommendation comes out of the city center revitalization planning process, the farmers market will have a venue that is as good as what they have now, if not better. You know, so, and that's possible.
Would the commons be as good as, if not better?
Okay. They don't think so.
No, they don't.
They
think
do not
so.
Think so.
There's well, they are well represented on the advisory committee. I mean, they have two positions on there, so they will have their say through this. They will, you know, those that are on the farmers market, and I know the farmers market enjoy the current location. But I'll be candid to you. I know how that current. I was part of the reason. You know, that used to be an old, dilapidated commercial building. It became available. We convinced, you know, we talked to the council, said, hey, look, this would be a great property to purchase for potential expansion of,
building,
yeah, expansion of the City Hall campus.
Housing up top.
Someday we're going to need, you know, a new police facilities or new fire station or some form of expansion of our City Hall campus, and we have nowhere else to grow. That's a perfect location. In the meantime, how about a parking lot? Because that makes some sense. So it's not a huge investment. You know, we're probably not going to need to put a building on that property or some form of property for at least 10 years, you know. And then, you know, that allowed the farmers market to get in there off instead of doing side streets all over the place where they were moving around over the years. And it's worked out great for them. But that's not the end-all be-all. At some point, that's going to need to be used for other city purposes anyway. Would be nice to get them a location that actually is a little bit more, it's specifically designed for the market.
Yeah, it's good.
You know?
It's on the highway. It's kind of people going across the street.
And Braulio, if you tried to remove that as a task here, you'd probably start that whole funding process all over again that's already gone on for a year and isn't done yet because you changed the scope of work.
That's one more hearing, too.
It's going to be contentious, and no matter what decision you make, there's going to be folks who are disapprove of the decision.
Right, but the farmers market's going to be minor compared to the couplet and the contentiousness
the
of that.
Will dictate what happens to the market.
Right.
I think,
well,
you know,
the market's current location.
As you've seen through any of a number of processes that we've gone through, these issues will get refined. And they will become really specific by the time you as a policy-making body need to make a recommendation to the council, for example. So a lot of the concerns you probably heard up to this point, you know, they're going to be answers, you know, to those, you know, through this process. And so my expectation, just like it was with short-term rentals, is eventually you get down to very detailed, specific points of disagreement. And you have the ability as policymakers to work through those, as you did with short-term rentals, which you had a room full of people of very different perspectives on that.
Do the vendors pay any fee to use the market?
Yes, and it's kind of expensive.
No, but not to the city.
Oh, okay.
To be clear, I'm not aware of any fee that they pay to the city. It's a rolling special event permit, and I don't know of that. Now, there are certain things that they've agreed to do that have costs, they have volunteers dealing with traffic, that kind of thing.
But the individual vendors would pay to the farmer's market.
Right.
What are you saying?
That, like, individual vendors pay a fee for your booth every week.
But it doesn't go to the city. The city's
no, it goes to the market.
Yeah.
It goes to the folks who are running the market.
Yes, as far as I know. Right.
Yeah.
I looked into it because I do vendor events, but I don't do the right things.
10 bucks for small vendors. I don't know if large vendors pay more, but
I think it's 40 or 50. $10.
That's a very...
That's a couple years ago when...
That's less than a loaf of bread at Fred Meyer's these days.
What?
But our council's been clear. They recognize the value that the farmers market brings to the community, the interest that the community has in having that type of service available to it, and we're very clear that at the end of the day, the farmers market is going to have a viable location.
And they don't own anything there. I mean, they just
Could you share a greater identity of what a public gathering location would entail, which is 24B-1C, just above the farmer's market. A public gathering location as part of the city center. Is that a housing or is that an open air for concerts and for protests?
Or just like a square?
Picnicking?
Or just like a little square?
The open theater at the library, something like that.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
I don't think that's big.
The genesis of it, which is in the TSP, the transportation system plan went so far with this that it had two options. And with the couplet option, one of the features that they threw in there was that on some of the side streets, say like Lee, for example, between 9th and 101, you could put a public plaza in there.
You
could even set it up such that you structure it such that you could even have the streets closed down at certain periods of time for street fairs or whatever. I think that was the genesis of this, but to be candid, the process is intended to kind of flesh that out and identify what that really should be, whether it's what I just mentioned or it's a public gathering space that's built into one of the gateways that they're looking to create, as part of this. I don't know. Yeah. That's what this revitalization planning process is supposed to kind of...
You got your email from the state that seemed to suggest they'd have funding in place in 4 weeks. Is that a result of this special session?
No. That is a result of their crazy long pull your hair out process and procurement finally coming to an end. I mean, I don't know how many emails I have from them apologizing about how long it's taking to get through their procurement process. It's really irresponsible from my perspective, because now I think it's going to be the third time the consultant's going to have to rebuild the schedule.
So once the funding is in place, what would be the city's timeline?
Well, we're looking at probably an 18-month process. Then we could probably shrink that down to 14. But we'll see how that works in the schedule and what your and the council's tolerance is and the advisory committee's tolerance is for streamlining. Because when you streamline, that means you're pushing things forward. Maybe you're trimming down your points of engagement and stuff like that. So, but 18 months is what we had mapped out. Now, on the far end.
So 18 months to complete the design, then when we start turning shovels.
Any change to the US 101 alignment, you're probably looking at minimum 7 years to 10 years before you actually have a constructed product. The cost of the changes we're talking about are going to require state and federal money. Those will have to be secured. Those then would get, memorialized in the State Transportation Improvement Plan, what we call a STIP. The current STIP is the 24-27 STIP. It's a 3-year cycle with the State Oregon Department of Transportation. So we need to get into the STIP cycle so that we have it funded. Then you're looking at right-of-way acquisition. You're looking at design. I mean, these are all going to take, and then your final construction.
Yeah. I'll be using.
I mean, you're looking at a, you know, $10 to $15 million project. It's not. This is not a small project to get it all done, and a lot of work. And as you can see, with Philomath's work right now, which is a refresher to the couplet.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
This is a beautification effort. This wasn't the original couplet. We all know there was one there already. It takes a long time. The construction piece doesn't always move as quickly as you want it either.
Really? That happened? Yeah.
Happens.
I was looking at the plaza thing that I worked on as a planner. And I just saw that they're on phase two, and this was in 1994, and right now they're in phase two. So, but we won an award years ago. It does, yeah. But I was, because you asked, what would it be? And this, the plaza is just like little places to sit down while you're waiting to go. They got an old movie theater, and now they made it into like plays and things. And so you sit out there and wait for the plays or wait for Ace Hardware to open. But it was, took a long time.
Yeah.
But it's nice.
I'm going to push through a little bit quick if you don't mind, because we're about half hour into the work session. I want to make sure to get through this. So another one has to do with implementation of the recommendations of the parking plan. We will have the Bayfront stuff up and all completed this fiscal year. Right now, we're ready to put the pay stations in. We're waiting on the security cameras to go up because we don't want the pay stations in without eyes on them. And our IT folks ran into a little bit of a problem with PUD. It's not the PUD's a problem, I want to be clear. But we aren't able, we can't use the wooden poles for our security cameras. So we gotta, and those are right in the middle of a network deployment. So we got to figure out another way to deal with that gap. We're going to have to drop our own pole or poles, a couple of them probably, to deal with that. And we're in the process of making that happen. It's just extended our schedule out a little bit. So now we're looking at early March before the pay stations are in and up and operable. But we're getting there. Yeah.
Just jogged my memory. You said poles. The whole 5G thing that we spent a huge amount of time on, got all the things done. Somebody told me, it might have been you, Bill.
What's me?
That 5G is available in Newport right now without one of those poles ever going up because they changed the technology on the bigger towers.
Yeah, you want to see my...
No, I don't. I believe you.
I know, I just looked too.
Is that... Do you know anything about that?
Well, a lot of the work we did actually was on the small wireless deployment. And we haven't seen somebody come in on the small wireless yet. So... But we have the framework in place, which is what the purpose was, just so that we can deal with it.
The technology may have changed so that isn't even necessary.
We'll see. I really don't have any information on it. We haven't had any telecom folks talking to us. We've always known we've had the towers and the tower capacity. So.
Okay.
So with parking, next year will largely be a discussion with Nye Beach, and they're going to be, that discussion will involve getting them into a parking permit program and what that parking permit program should look like. And, we've got interest there, believe it or not, too, from folks. They'd like to get that going since parking enforcement's up and operable again. a number of folks would like to buy a permit. Because they want to park in those three-hour time-limited areas for longer than 3 hours. So we'll have an active and engaged group, but that'll be the discussion for next year.
And Donna's doing a great job. Valentine's doing a great job.
Yep, the LPR, just so you know, Bill, the LPR array is now all working properly on the car.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yep.
That guy it's all good. Around there.
It wasn't an LPR issue, it was a car issue that kind of they thought it might have been an LPR that caused it, but it wasn't. It was just a car breaking down.
Valentine would like to have a car that has electric windows so he doesn't have to roll them down.
Air service at the airport's getting is a serious issue with respect to retaining NOAA, as noted here, and meeting other business needs. Our department has kind of a peripheral role in that. It's not a, we're not all that directly involved, but get pulled into discussions relative to attracting, you know, air service from time to time, and what that might look like, and what kind of grant funds might be leveraged, and what kind of short-term funding, you know, would be needed to get somebody up and going, that kind of thing. Opportunities for building.
Hey, Derek.
Yes.
So on that, I read an article in the Oregonian yesterday, and I think they interviewed Spencer, and he said he was that the city's committed to helping, but there was no like specificity about what that'll entail.
Correct.
Okay. So from a land use perspective, there's nothing you can really do to help encourage that, right? It's about showing from communities and business members, showing that they would be willing to utilize the flight service, and therefore that would be what would trigger interest from some sort of carrier.
Right. You're going down the right path. So okay. Right now the survey work is soliciting who all would be interested. Then it's going to turn to who all would not just be interested, but be willing to put money down. And if there's enough there, then, you know, somebody like, Boutique Air, which I think is the one that they've had some conversations with, who's running a Pendleton run right now. They have a flight, I believe it's from Portland to Pendleton. That's the type of provider they'd be targeting, because they have to go with small planes. We're not equipped at the municipal airport to handle larger airplanes. So it's going to be the small hoppers.
When you get okay. in a plane, you get in like this.
Are those big military aircraft that come in only doing touch and go? They take a lot of runway. You say that the airport can't handle larger planes, but I see
I'm not an expert on military. This one, Jim, but from what I understand, to handle larger passenger airplanes with members of the general public on them,
different.
We have to have a bigger runway, a little bit more robust facility. What it can technically handle or what the military is willing to have one of their pilots fly into, I really can't speak to that. But I know we've had, you know, military planes and helicopters recently just pop down in there.
How long ago did Seaport leave?
Quite some time ago. They just ramped up. I want to say they were here in, 2011? Right when NOAA arrived, and they left like a year or two after NOAA got here. NOAA, I think, took occupancy in 2011. I'm pretty sure, or 12. It's in that range.
They had enough frequency to leave here in the morning, fly to Portland, go downtown, shop, come back and catch the evening flight back to Newport.
Well,
day trip to Portland.
They had $2 million in grant funds that they were chewing through. Upfront subsidy that went away. And when the subsidy went away, Seaport went away.
So that's the challenge. I assume that anybody investigating this is going to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Correct. That's the expectation. It's got to be sustainable. There may be some upfront subsidy, but it would have to be, you know, programmed in a manner in which, you know, you couldn't have that happen again. Developing opportunities for buildable lands. The island annexation project needs to be moved forward. I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot with that. That's why you haven't had an update. It keeps getting kicked down. We know we have to get it done by end of 2025. And so I've got to get that moving here pretty soon. And that's because it's a South Beach Urban Renewal funded project, and that funding goes away after 2025.
Need a volunteer? I love annexations.
Oh, no, we'll get there.
All right. That used to be my career for 14 years.
One thing that we do have out there, right, or should start gearing up for at some point, is doing a new commercial industrial buildable lands inventory. The last one we did was actually more than 10 years ago, and the big piece of that was kind of the catalyst for getting the Northside Urban Renewal District going. and which was ultimately put in place in 2015, and the resulting work now on the city center revitalization, so on and so forth. But I say that because our available industrial lands is dwindling, and so we, at some point, will need to look to where could we add additional industrial land. Excuse me.
So there's no legislative mandate on that. It's just a smart thing to do.
Okay. Thank you, John. Correct. We are not mandated to do an update. Everything at the state up right now is focused on housing. They haven't focused on, there have been periods of time where, you know, economic issues were the primary focus, but it's been a while. That said, there are grant funds available for what we call, these economic opportunity analysis. And so we would be competitive for those funds if we want to go out and get those. They don't want all of their grant funds to be housing specific. They recognize there's still a range of other needs. Affordable housing has been a huge focus for us, given the various strategies, I'm not going to go through them all. You guys all know a lot of them. You've been dealing with and putting in place a lot of those. You know, we are, over the last 10 years, we've been at over 50 units a year, which is, you know, our target is 30. It's about 31, actually. And so we've been over 50 for the last 10 years, and we've been over 80 a year for the last 5 years. And so, you know, when you're at 50 or 150% of your target, you know, we're doing well. We're adding units. A lot of multifamily over the last few years, which has helped with that figure. And we have quite a bit in the pipeline. One of the bills in the short session has 875,000 earmarked for infrastructure related to the final phase of Windhaven, for example. We are taking steps to secure resources. We're taking steps to adjust our code to make it, you know, easier to get housing in. I mean, you're going to have a hearing in your regular session that covers some of that, you know. You know, even things like, you know, skinny street standards, which you put in place. And, you know, they help in certain circumstances. We have a development that's moving forward on Fifth Street that wouldn't move forward if not for the fact that we have that. They wouldn't be able to afford it, and they didn't have the right-of-way to do a full street section, even if they wanted to. But what you'll be seeing tonight, too, with the, you know, minimum lot size adjustments, that's going to allow some infill development where it can't happen right now. And, you know, when it's a unit here, a unit there, it all counts. The adjustments we made to our SDC methodology to go to that price per square foot assessment and streamlining the number of projects we were collecting for, that's really helped with upfront development costs. We've seen ADUs where we didn't see them before, in part because of that. You know, so it all helps. And that's been a big focus, and I think we've had quite a bit of success. We've also, I think, been successful, and not only locally, but also in Salem, in helping to educate policymakers that infrastructure is a huge deal. And if you don't have it, you're not going to have housing. And just because you have this big chunk of land inside your urban growth boundary that's designated for residential purposes doesn't mean you're going to see housing on it if it takes somewhere between 6 and 20 million just to get the infrastructure to the property. Oh. And so, you know, you've seen a big shift. You know, this legislative session, it's been largely about infrastructure.
That's good.
And funding. And it, you know, the state legislature's terrified because they realize just how big the need is out there and trying to figure out, you know, how can they help with the limited resources they can offer given the need.
Yeah, by axing $150 million out of the request. It's urgent, but not that urgent. I'm wondering if, to reflect the fact that we have already taken action and are taking more action tonight, instead of for 2425 initiate, could we say continue? Just to reflect that this is already underway as we enter next fiscal year.
Yep.
Trolley. I don't know why I missed that one earlier.
That's going to hang out there for a little bit.
That's cool.
Maybe it is, but we need
maybe a trolley driver.
We need a dedicated funding source. We gave the council a report on that. Until we start seeing some revenue from parking meters, until we actually have a dedicated funding source that can help pay for that, we're really not in a position to pursue it.
Yeah, well, I didn't.
Because it's several hundred thousand a year that has to be driven into that to make it viable, paying bus drivers, buying buses, supporting the program administratively, all of that.
Yeah.
And unless you have the dedicated funding, it's not really worth pursuing. So I think it's a good idea. I think it in some form, you know, I don't know about trolley, but at least a rapid transit to the tourist areas, even if it's using small buses and have to be gimmicky trolley. But I mean, gimmicky trolley's cool too.
Yeah.
So B5.
Initiated. Drive the bookmobile.
Wastewater treatment plant master plan. That's going to be coming your way here pretty soon. It's in draft form. It's in your work program. It's pretty important because we need to modernize the facility, and we can't secure loan funds to do that until the master plan's adopted. You know, it's one of those things DEQ requires, you know, a master plan that, you know, has been actually vetted with a planning commission adopted by a council. It's not just a desk document in a engineer's office. You know, it's kind of, you know, so until we have that, we can't get the loans. And so, you know, I know Spencer's been pushing on it pretty hard, trying to get this out of the consultant who's been working on it, Brown and Caldwell. So
you have the consultant already and they're starting it.
It's substantially complete. You know, unfortunately, the original contract that Public Works put out didn't pick up all of the DEQ requirements, so they're going back and addressing some of that stuff because we need the DEQ loans, and so the plan has to address some of that stuff. Plus, we've also asked for some components such as policy, because how do you appropriately dispose of your treated biosolids? I know that's a discussion you guys had when we brought the part one plan to you, which was the pump stations and the distribution lines. And questions were coming up. Bob, I think you raised it, or Bill, one of you. What are the city's policies for taking the treated biosolids? You know, is it okay? Is it kosher to go put it out on, you know, other, you know, property in Lincoln County or what? And we said those policies will be with the wastewater treatment plan, part two. So, and they're not in there yet. So we told Brown and Caldwell to pull together some draft ones for us to take a look at. We're also going to be taking a look, ask them to give us a STC eligible project list. So they have the full project list, but they didn't go back in and say how much of these certain projects are growth related and thus would be projects we could put into our STC methodology. Some of those might be 20% SDC eligible because of their growth component. Others 100, others 0. We don't know right now. They need to go through and do an initial cut. So those are some of the things they're still working on.
I was on a sludge committee one year. Isn't that like fun?
I think the biosolid stuff gets really complicated, particularly with pharmaceuticals and the derivatives you have in the biosolid.
I like that
name
better than the sludge committee. It's not very fun.
We have a number of final projects in South Beach Urban Renewal that we're working to power through because they have to be completed by the end of 2025. That will include final round of some pathway connections down there. We are getting the large septic in at the airport, which would support further airport-related development. We have a redundant underbay crossing for a water line so that we have two water mains that go to South Beach. We've had the one that we've had since, 1975, which is on the bottom of the bay. Not below the bay, on the bottom of the bay, get damaged before. And we realized just, you know, when that happens, South Beach is in a pinch. Even if we can tie into Seal Rock, they have capacity issues too. So those are some of the projects that we're pushing forward with.
And what's going on with the piece of property down there with South Beach Churches?
Yeah, we had an agreement with Halley Development. Halley pulled out on it right before the agreement was to be adopted. I mean, like 2 days before. They pulled out. Their reasoning was that I think they're over leveraged. Is kind of what the sense I got, and with current commercial lending environment and what they're forecasting moving forward, they're a little spooked about how much more they wanted to commit on projects. That location for that type of project made a lot of sense. They thought it was good. The guy who I'd been working with, who was Paul Berger, who was their lead for packaging projects, you know, was very apologetic. He said, I really wanted to move forward on this project. But my boss, John Oxenholt, who's the, you know, owner, said at the last minute, nope, we don't want to take this on. And they knew that, you know, obviously once the agreement's signed, they're on the hook for something. So this was the last chance to bail. But from my perspective, that's bad form. We've been working a very long time with them. We've invested a lot of resources. They had, I mean, we had a 40 some odd page, you know, disposition development agreement that gone through legal review on both sides. I mean, we were that close. And that's what happened. So we're going to have to now put the RFP back out. One advantage we have, we talked to the council. One advantage we have is that we have the disposition development agreement done. All we have to do is take the Halley stuff out, and any prospective developer will know really kind of what they'd be committing to. So, I mean, you want to put a positive spin to it, that would be one. So.
All right. Dustin, how's your new church coming?
It is coming very well. We submitted all the plans to the city of Newport, so everything is submitted.
Yeah, the South Beach Church is out, and we're going to be moving forward with demolition. And that's something we expect.
Okay, so you're not going to just let them stay?
Oh, no, they're gone. They've been out. Yeah, they're out.
Oh,
they're,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, no, they've co-located short term with a church, Foursquare, I believe, up there by the back behind the Burger King, Fred Meyer Fuel Station back there. There's a church. But you know, another one of the reasons obviously was time, and so, you know, this time around with the RFP, we really want to be in a position where we don't have an existing tenant we're working around, and how that impacts your schedule. Because obviously, if we were able to move forward in a 4 to 6 month window instead of this much longer one we did, because we were, you know, we wanted to give the church a longer period of time to get out, well, that commercial lending issue probably wouldn't have come up because the lending environment hadn't changed, you know, so you're always at risk the longer that schedule is. So if we can tighten it up and provide a development ready site, eliminate some variables, that'll play in the city's favor too.
When you're doing DDA negotiations, do you secure up front the internal costs, so like legal costs and your staff time to negotiate the deal?
No.
I mean, that's what I'm used to where I come from. Give us the money, we'll negotiate with you, but we're not going to come out of pocket for just these kinds of examples where they bail at the last minute.
Yeah.
Something to think about from a policy standpoint to protect yourself.
City investment for no return on it.
That's not a bad, yeah.
And I guess they submit an application too, right?
It needs to be an RFP, and it's very important to go through an RFP process because
in the application, put the money down. I mean, say.
Oh, you could build it into the process.
Yeah.
There could be like a good faith payment of some sort. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Right.
No, I had somebody ask me, why couldn't you just get a commercial broker? And the point is, because we're discounting the value of the property. And when you discount the value of the property to get the use you want, we're saying we want specific things, and for that, we'll discount the value of the property. It really needs to be an open, competitive process. you go through a commercial broker, then people are saying, well, and the fix is in, you know, it's whoever that broker likes or, you know, no, it's open RFP process. We'd like as many proposals as we can get.
How many proposals were there the last time?
One.
Oh, good.
But you had a process. That's, frankly, that's what's important.
That's the important piece. Process. You have the process.
Yeah.
Complete ped safety improvements throughout the community. We are moving forward with a number of them. The Safe Routes Project at Harney is going to be contracted for design. It has to be paired with a ODOT signal replacement project at 20 and Harney and Moore. And one of the challenges we're running into right now is is ODOT's designing that signal project, and we're going to have two new north and dedicated lefts on Harney and Moore. Well, those have storage requirements on those new turn lanes, which then forces you back and widens out your right of way. So we're trying to figure out where we have to put the sidewalk, frankly, so that it ties in properly with the state project. And so we're working through it. State project won't get constructed till 28, but it's ODOT, so it's like designed over a 3-year period. It's kind of basically how that works. Somebody had asked when will a lighthouse to lighthouse connection happen? Federal Highways got back to us. I mean, we secured $6 million for that multi-use path on the west side from Lighthouse down to Ocean View. Federal Highways said they'll start design in 26. So it's in their program. It's their money. That's so
something. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's and that's going to be the bulk of the money for the project. We can bring urban renewal to bear, but that's the bulk of the money, that $6 million coming from Federal Highways. And they're the ones stepping up to do the design. We're kind of beholden to them in terms of their schedule. Yeah. That's probably about, oh, no, there was one more down here. Homelessness task force. That's not done. That, you know, we will we'll continue to be working with our partners on, homeless services, expanding shelter capacity, that continuum of housing need, not just the short-term shelter, but then into the transitional housing and trying to help support nonprofits to build up their capacity to provide those services. So our department will continue to have a role in a lot of that in terms of coordinating and helping with grants. And sure. So that was the council goals. I didn't dive into the Planning Commission specific ones, but I mean, as you've probably looked through the packet, our goals, your goals, council's goals largely align. So I guess my question to you is there any major piece that's not there? I am putting in funds to do an SDC methodology update. We'll see if that sticks to the budget process. I guess I'm giving three budget committee members a heads up at this point. But part of the reason for that is we have Rep. Gamba on the short session has, I think I mentioned to you this, there's the bill that will allow for deferred payment of SDCs. And it'll be a state, and that's got traction. So it's likely to clear the short session, which that means the state will be standing up their program. They'll have it funded. And we're going to need to make some changes to our code to sort out how we handled it locally. But the nice thing about that, again, is that, you know, it will allow people that are developing, it's going to be a particular benefit to larger developers. They won't have to finance the SDCs as part of their construction loan. They can actually roll it into their final financing package. And then the nice thing about this program is that the state backs it up, which means if they don't pay at whatever that deferred date is that they were allowed to pay at, then the state pays us, and then the state goes and deals with the delinquent party. not the city, which is the huge, huge value to us. Because that's tough, even for larger cities like Medford that already offer a deferral. Medford was clear when they provided testimony on that. We do, but we only offer deferral to a certain point.
If the state guarantees payment of the deferred development charges,
yeah,
does the state then take a lien against the realty?
You know, I'm not, the state would then be responsible for enforcing and getting those funds. Exactly what tax they'll take, I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to go and look and see if how much they really spelled that out in the bill in terms of trying to recover funds.
If they have to take it back, they don't want to be behind West Bancorp.
Well, I assume it's some form of collections. Now, what's it mean in terms of, well, see, this is tricky because when you're talking about SDCs, you're not just talking about rental properties where the developer may still have an ownership interest that you can lean against, but you also have for sale properties, which is a whole different critter. You know, they're out of it at that point. So, you know, exactly how they pursue that, I can't say yet. And part of me doesn't really care. As long as the city's being paid,
right,
that's the state's issue problem at that point. That's not ours.
I got 7 o'clock. Do we have anybody for the public hearing or?
Currently, we don't have anybody participating online, nor do we have anybody in the audience right now.
Okay. Well, then I guess we can continue for a while with the finishing up the work session. Doesn't run for 2 more hours.
I will just mention outside of the funding for the SDC methodology work, we are likely to have a package of changes to our subdivision ordinance. We haven't touched that in a while. There are some state things that we need to roll into that that we don't have in there right now. We have the governor's housing bill, which I'm going to have a conversation with you and the council as to how you want to deal with that. You know, it's probably going to get through, and it's got the tenant adjustment language. You know, they can do adjustments in certain provisions. How do we want to tackle that? What process do we want to apply to that? What fees do we want to impose on that? Are there any limitations accessing certain city programs that we want to throw in there as a disincentive to using that? I mean, those are all fair discussions, you know, to have, but we'll have to talk about that as well. And then on the building services side, you know, I'm probably 1 to 3 years out before we have to hire a new building official. So, you know, that's variable depending upon, you know, his interest and ability to continue to serve in that capacity. But I want to keep that out there because when we do need to make that change, that's going to be a pretty significant impact on us operationally and our ability to maybe move some other pieces, because we're going to have to focus a lot on that front for a little bit. Yep.
One other thing that occurred to me, and I don't even know we ever wrote it down, but last year we did that hotel thing.
Yeah.
And it was pretty obvious that the list of historic sites should not have been in the comp plan. Can we add a goal to review obsolete or inappropriate sections of the comp plan? And I know it's a long process and, you know, it's complicated, but in that particular instance, it's really silly to have that list in the comprehensive plan. And I don't think we took it out, that one, that hotel. It's probably still in there, and it shouldn't be. And then there's other buildings that no longer exist that are in that list.
We left it, but noted that it could be removed.
What did you offer, Dustin?
I was going to say, I will declare a conflict of interest here, but our house, our 1885 house, is in the comp plan as a historic site, but not a historic structure. And I always think that's crazy, too, because the structure was so heavily renovated in the 60s that it's not a historic structure anymore, but it's still listed in the city's comp plan. So declaring a conflict of interest, but I definitely have interest in that.
It just seems to me there ought to be a process for adding and deleting things, and the list itself ought to be separate, can be changed by resolution.
Who could have a committee for it?
No, the council can handle it.
Yeah, I know. I was like, who's...
Are you thinking specific to historic structures, or are you thinking more broadly about looking at the comp plan for eliminating anything we don't need?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the comp plan.
Those are two different
projects.
Ones,
that's the one specific thing that came up here that I thought we should take a look at.
Historic resources?
Yeah. And whether they should be enumerated in the comp plan, or there should be a procedure for handling additions, subtractions, whatever, as a separate list. Like we do with fees, you know. The council's
short of a comp plan amendment,
the fee.
Short of a comp plan amendment is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, because the comp plan is really a much more stable and high-level document than should be referring to individual properties, I think.
So are you saying that that could be a goal? Or...
Yeah, I guess that's how you add something on there that we think ought to get done.
Okay.
I know the couplet's already on there too, Derek, but I agree with Braulio. It's going to be confrontational. But I think living in a location where I do, that road is already almost being used as a couplet. I mean, people are driving that constantly. So I think it'd be interesting to begin really diving down that process, even if it is going to take, or I guess, especially because it's going to probably take 10 years.
Well, yeah, we're committed on that one. We've got $320,000 in funding for the project once we get the funding agreement. And then we're good to go. But you're right. Well, that's got to be part of the discussion. Anything else?
Nope.
Here's what I can do. I'll bring back a list of planning commission specific items. I'll pass on the comment you had about the council goal B5 that initiates, not the right word there. That's I totally see where you're coming from. I'll pass along to the city manager. I suspect he'll be willing to make that change. But then for the planning commission, I'll pull together yours for maybe the next meeting that reflect this discussion. Does that sound good? Or at least my best take at it, and you can adjust accordingly.
Okay. Next up was...
Derek, I have one other unrelated question, but on the previous church property, is the RFP, when it comes back out, going to be the same, or is there going to be modifications to the language in the RFP?
There'll be some modifications in the language, but I don't expect the radical ones.
Is the price, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a while since I reviewed that RFP. The property is not free, right?
No. Nope.
What was there an actually designated price in the RFP?
The way the RFP was structured, it indicated that the agency was willing to discount the property up to a certain point. Well, I believe it was like around either to $725,000 or $750,000. So that was put out there.
That's the discount.
So $750,000 off fair market value?
Wait, I'm sorry. What?
Is $750,000 off of fair market value?
That would be the sales price.
$750,000.
Discount its value to that amount.
Okay, thank you.
And there was always room, the way you structure these RFPs, there's always room for a proposer to propose some alternative figure if they think it's justified based on the level of investment, what they'll be value adding to the project. I mean, we're getting public restrooms and walkways and stuff out of that, you know. Depends on the concept.
Okay, are we done with the goals? We have zoning standards for schools, briefly.
Yeah, I can be brief on it. I know this was something you asked to be put on the work program just for discussion purposes. So I put that in here. I, in my memo, outlined under what circumstances we allow schools, where they're allowed. They're allowed in a fairly broad context, as you see from there. Most, obviously, our public schools are I believe, all on P1 zone property. So that would be your high school, your middle school, Sam Case, Equiniview, they're all on public zone property, as is the community college. Hatfield Marine Science Center is you know, on a W-2 zone under a marine education designation that was put in there specifically to accommodate that type of collaboration that they have down at Hatfield. And then, you know, you have in the code, you have your, depending on where you're at, if you're in the residential, schools are structured a little bit differently than if you're in the commercial industrial. But the clear intent in there really, particularly on the commercial industrial side, well, it, when you get into the residential, you get into this kind of conditional anything kind of mode. But, and you'll often in the residential context see them paired with churches. We just did that with South Beach Church, you know, where you have a 50-student private school that's paired with the larger church facility. But then, you know, you get into the commercial areas. One, there's a desire to protect the tourist commercial zones because we don't have a lot of tourist commercial zone land, and it's very valuable for what it, that purpose it serves, like Night Beach being a tourist, you know, attraction. The hotel kind of row on Elizabeth is also in a C2 tourist commercial zone. And then you have the industrial zones where we generally don't want small kids. For example, you don't want elementary schools in a industrial area because you're dealing with industrial levels of traffic, noise, and things like that. And so not only are you impacting the children in that case, which is not an appropriate location for them, but you're impacting the industrial users because now they have to dodge little kids, peewees, and deal with complaints about noise and all the other fun stuff that you get as an industrial user. So that's the short spiel of it. Generally haven't had an issue with people who said, you know, hey, look, you know, I wish we could do a school, but we can't seem to make it work. Now, we put the kibosh a long time ago to South Beach Church's aspirations of putting one down on the South Beach property because at that time it wasn't an industrial classification. We said, no, we don't want it. And we were the landlord, too, so you have a little bit of leverage. Said, we don't really want to, you know, little ones down there because it's an industrial classification, not an appropriate location. But, you know, outside of that, we've had pretty good luck. South Beach Church's current school is up there at, I want to see, was it?
Boston Yelps Club.
Right, at Moore and 20. On the west side there, they're cohabitating with the church there, and that's on a split residential commercial zone, and it's worked out. Often, you know, churches make a lot of sense because they're designed to handle that kind of occupancy, so you usually have kind of the egress in place that you need, you know, because you know when, especially if it's an elementary small children. You know, they have to have a pretty clear path to exit the structure in case of a fire and stuff like that.
Could you refresh our memory? Why is it we're even talking about this?
You asked for it.
Yeah, I did.
Specifically, yeah.
You did, yes.
About school zoning?
Yes.
In what context?
That was in the context of the creative commercial work, and you said you wanted schools as a discussion item.
Right. Ah, yeah. Ah, okay. Right. Thank you. You did refresh my memory.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're being polite.
I don't know that there's anything specific we need to do there, but
that's well, good.
Well, you make a good point about the tourist commercial, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a question on the classification tables.
Yeah, sure.
There's number 20, I believe. We have in there mining and sand and gravel.
Yeah.
I mean, the mining stuff, I mean, there's nothing left to mine up there except red clay.
You mean at the lighthouse?
No, the mining up by the...
Iron Mountain?
Yeah, beyond, up there by the city dump.
Oh.
Across from the PUD and all that. That's where the mine once upon a time was, but no sand or gravel. So do we even need that in here anymore?
Yeah, because you have you have an I-3 zone piece that's owned by the Tryons, and they specifically want to keep that as a location for a sand and gravel operation, potentially. Maybe some crushed rock. That's a, you know, that's the I-3 piece on the south side of 40th. Right. Remember they came in and objected to the rezoning on that. Remember when we were doing the, their attorney came in and objected because they specifically want to use that
ability for to use,
heavy industrial purposes.
Yeah. Okay,
well, I know. So, sometimes we have uses that you have a hard time.
Well, should we add to that logging? Because I happen to notice up there right behind the I-3, there was a logging operation going on. They must have cut the, they must have cut down 40, 50.
As soon as you get into logging, it goes under the jurisdiction of state forestry. We don't really want to, we don't have a regulatory role there. I mean, the best we can do is say...
Within city limits.
Whether it's in the city or outside the city, the way the state laws are structured, if it's a commercial harvest, we're out. It's exclusive purview of state forestry.
Okay.
Then, and they, I mean, there are rules they have to follow with state forestry, and some might say...
If it's city property?
Logging interests.
Well, if it's city property, then we're the... Then we don't want people stealing trees. Yeah. We have rules for that. We have a whole process, tree board and all that, for people removing trees off public rights or public property. We've had that issue come up before where people say, well, I don't want that tree in front of me. It's blocking my view. Well, we have put a whole process in place for, okay, you can go to the tree board, and if they allow it to happen, you have to replace it with plantings and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, logging is a big lobby.
Okay.
What's next?
Okay. All right. Sounds like
unfinished
we covered that base.
Well, yeah. I'm still, I guess, a little concerned with this, with the craft changes that we made, craft business.
Uh-huh.
If somebody wanted to say, I'm going to have a new business there in Nye Beach, and I'm going to, it's going to be a how to draw whatever. Uh-huh. You know, a drawing class.
Yep.
As a regular commercial venture, you charge people, they come in, sit down.
Yeah.
That is that considered a school?
Well, we put that language in there that allowed for that in a, I'm trying to remember the exact language, but we put in some specific language that Carol requested to accommodate that teaching component. I just don't remember the verbiage off the top of my head, Bob, but we added that.
I think that was probably my concern, is it didn't want to...
Well, that was their concern, and she offered up some language that made sense that wasn't just a full-on, like, you know, K-8 school. It's more of that little targeted, if they're, like, it's an apprenticeship or it's a, you know, small group, you know, class on, I don't know, carving widgets of some sort, that would be permissible.
Okay.
That's all. We have a work program, just an updated one I put in here, so you had the information.
Okay, anything else on the work program? If not, the work session has ended at 7:20.